Tropical deforestation is a major cause of climate change, according to the Union of Concerned Scientists. Greenhouse gases emitted via deforestation represents about 20% of the world's global warming. That's roughly equivalent to the total emissions of the United States or China, or more than every car, truck, plane, ship, or train on Earth. Today we discuss an initiative aimed at reducing those greenhouse gas emissions called RED, Reducing Emissions from Deforestation and Forest Degradation in Developing Countries. And joining us in studio, Tracy Johns. She's the policy advisor at the Woods Hole Research Center and co-leader of the RED Initiative. Good morning, Tracy.
Good morning, Mindy.
And on the phone, we have Dan Nepstedt, who is the Chief Program Officer for Environmental Conservation at the Gordon and Betty Moore Foundation. Good morning to you, Dan.
Good morning, Mindy.
Now, before we get into specifics about the RED Initiative, you can sort of chime in a little bit here and tell us about the UN Climate Conference that was held in Poland last month. And we have scientists from around the world who gather at this annual conference. And Dan, last year we talked with you the year before in 2007 in Bali. Tell us for people who aren't familiar what the goal of this is.
This annual meeting is where the conference of the parties is the conference of the parties where nations from around the world come together. They send their official delegations to work out the details of what the global climate treaty endorsed by the United Nations will look like in the period following 2012. Right now, we're in a treaty that it's called the Kyoto Protocol, and the United States is not part of that treaty. We're hoping that the United States will be part of the treaty that is finished in Copenhagen in December of this year. But these are big events with lots of delegates from many nations, but also lots of non-governmental people who are there trying to influence in a positive way, mostly, the outcome of the negotiations.
Yep. Anything you want to add to that, Tracy?
The conference includes about between 10 and 12,000 people normally. And as Dan mentioned, it does include extensive participation from governments around the world, as well as research organizations, environmental groups such as Greenpeace and Friends of the Earth and Environmental Defense Fund, and also business organizations that are involved in green energy and things like that. So it involves quite a wide array of people who are involved in trying to influence the outcome of the treaty that will be designed to follow the Kyoto Protocol.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about RED. This has become a key topic in the UN negotiations on climate treaty. And I'll start with you this time, Tracy. What are the biggest policy issues in the RED discussions?
The RED discussions have come a long way over the last couple of years. Back when RED was first included as a topic to be considered, there was very little known about how one would go about designing a mechanism to include these developing countries and helping them to reduce their emissions from deforestation. Over the last 2 years, there's been a lot of research put into the RED process, and countries have spent a lot of time negotiating and analyzing some of the options that have been brought forward. Some of the main obstacles that are still being discussed as far as the negotiations go, it's been pretty well established that this process will need to include countries that have high deforestation rates now. In other words, countries like Brazil and Indonesia that are currently deforesting at very high rates and causing a lot of emissions going into the atmosphere and causing global warming. However, there are also a lot of countries who want to participate in this mechanism who have a lot of forests but don't yet have a very high deforestation rate. And we need to figure out a way to include these countries to provide incentives for them to continue to protect their forests. While we can't reward them based on a high deforestation rate, we have to find another way to provide incentives for them to continue the good activities that have protected their forests so far.
Yeah. If you have a question or a comment this morning, our toll-free number is 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@wgbh.org. Dan, can you tell us a little bit more what the RED Initiative involves? How does this work?
The basic idea is that as a tropical nation demonstrates that it has reduced its emission of greenhouse gases, mostly carbon dioxide here, from deforestation or forest degradation, like logging, forest fire, that it would be compensated for that success. And the basic principle is that. Of course, whether or not how they demonstrate that success, whether that is success demonstrated against their historical rates of deforestation, or, as Tracy mentioned, there are some nations that have really not begun their wave of deforestation, such as some of the Congo nations. Those are some of the things that are up for debate right now. And another big issue is how these countries are going to spread out the benefits of compensation. Indigenous people from around the world are concerned. They've lived in these forests for many years. They've defended them from intruders, and they want to make sure that they get a fair cut of whatever flow of funds comes into these countries. And that's one of the big issues that's being worked out now.
Yeah, that was one of the questions I have, because obviously this there's been debate about how this would impact indigenous people in forest communities. So do they have a seat at the table?
They do now, actually.
They do now.
In the past, when RED was first being discussed, it was very much centered around governments, central governments. And it's come to the realization of folks involved in designing this mechanism over time that really, in order for RED to succeed, you'll need to involve all of the stakeholders who are involved either in deforesting now or in protecting their forests. And at the meeting in Bali last year, the UN meeting in Bali, indigenous organizations really made their voice heard for the first time and really staked a claim in this process. And since that time, it's really been fascinating to watch governments respond to them. And it's gotten to the place now where organizations who are funding RED activities in countries are requiring that governments include in their plans for designing a RED program a consultation process that involves indigenous organizations and local communities so that they have a voice as well in the design of the RED programs.
Yeah. Dan, I know you've done a lot of work in Brazil, and Tracy just a minute ago mentioned Brazil's high rate of deforestation. Give us a little explanation of, you know, people hear this and go, well, how could that account for so much of global warming pollution? Tell us a little bit about your research and what you've found in Brazil and how it affects the climate.
I've worked in Brazil for about 24 years in the Amazon and looking at deforestation and ways of slowing it down. Basically, as the United States, when it began its colonization process and we raised the forests of the East and moved west and marching through Michigan and Wisconsin and into the Great Plains and replacing forests with agriculture, first we harvested the trees for timber, and it's a very similar process. And the history of humanity is a history of replacing forest ecosystems with ecosystems that are more interesting to people because you can go grow crops on them or raise livestock on them. The main driver of deforestation in Brazil is cattle ranching. It's about 3/4 of all of the cleared forest goes into cattle. The sad thing is that it's a type of cattle ranching that's very extensive. You've got one animal for every 2.5 acres of cleared land. It's not a very efficient or productive form of ranching. And that's one reason why Brazil could actually slow its deforestation rates way down without taking a big hit on its economy. Mm-hmm. They could have an expanding cattle herd in areas that are already cleared by merely managing forest grasses, better intensifying production, and thereby take the pressure off the forest. So that is a very real option in Brazil. And they've come forward with the world's most bold proposals for doing that, announced in Poznan.
And what were those? What are the bold proposals?
Well, Minister Mink, Environment Minister from Brazil, announced a decision to reduce deforestation 70% in the Brazilian Amazon. Brazil has about 60% of the Amazon forest, 70% by the year 2017. Since deforestation in Brazil is itself 70% of national emissions, in other words, it's way bigger than fossil fuel burning through cars and industry. that represents about a 50% reduction in national emissions in less than 10 years. Mm. That stands now as the most ambitious target for greenhouse gas emissions reductions of any nation in the world. And it comes from one of the biggest economies in the world. So that was really the high point, I think, in Poznan, Poland in December. That is, this country, which has been a very effective negotiator in the climate treaty, came forward on a proposal that a few years ago it was very much opposed to. Mm-hmm. And now they're saying they want to be a leader and show the world the way to getting tropical deforestation under control.
Right. We are talking about the RED initiative, reducing emissions from deforestation and forest degradation in developing countries. And our guests today are Tracy Johns, policy advisor at the Woods Hole Research Center and co-leader of the RED initiative, and Dan Nepstead, chief program officer for environmental conservation at the Gordon and Betty Moore Foundation. Our toll-free number, if you'd like to join our conversation or if you have a question, 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@wgbh.org. So the idea here is to make protecting the forests an option economically compared to what dollars it would bring in to chop it down, right? So you're trying to make it so it's economically feasible to keep these forests there. Is that the idea?
That's right. For many of these countries with development plans, to keep the forest standing doesn't provide any monetary value. So their only option in many cases for considering development is the price that these forests are worth cut down. So what the RED initiative is trying to do basically is change that balance, is shift the balance from forests being more valuable cut down to providing value for them as a standing forest, to try and reflect the value that is inherent in these forests, both for their climate benefits, for their benefits to local communities and indigenous organizations, indigenous peoples, as well as the sustainable development opportunities that standing forests have for ecotourism and sustainable management of forests. So the RED initiative is trying to help these countries find a way to sustainably develop while protecting their forests at the same time. Yeah.
Now, how do you put a monetary value on a forest?
Well, it's a challenging initiative, to be sure, and this is one of the things that the RED initiative is struggling with at this point. How can you place the correct value on the forests? And because this is a climate convention where this discussion is taking place, the value is being identified through the price of carbon. The forests, the trees contain carbon, which is what, when the forests burn or are destroyed, is released into the atmosphere as carbon dioxide and causes global warming. The entire climate treaty is set up on reducing carbon emissions, whether the carbon comes from fossil fuels or, in this case, from forests. So by putting a value on each ton of carbon, this is how they are trying to value the forest through their climate benefits.
Can you explain the carbon credit aspect of this?
The carbon credit aspect works in the RED process. It is one of the options being considered for financing this forest protection. And the way that it works is basically, on a national level, a country will establish a baseline. They will, from a certain period of time, they will establish what their rates of deforestation are and establish how much carbon is being released into the atmosphere. Once that baseline has been set, then the country will monitor its deforestation rates and its carbon emissions. And if those improve over time, then per ton of carbon, the country will be awarded a price. So for every ton of carbon that they reduce their emissions beyond that baseline, they will be rewarded per ton of carbon.
Dan, do you have any thoughts on that? Do you want to add to that?
Yeah, I think one of the tricky things about the cost of slowing deforestation from a tropical nation's point of view is it's like telling the United States, listen, we decided that the Great Plains, we need them back into prairie, and let's hold off on agriculture. A lot of the tropical nations are looking at their tropical forest regions as potential expansion for crops like oil palm, which has a huge market currently because of its role in biofuels. And so they're really seeing the opportunity costs of keeping those forests standing, and that can be quite high. And so from the tropical nation's viewpoint, they're wondering, let's see, do we want to have a rural development trajectory that's based on forests with the possibility of getting these carbon credits that Tracy's describing, They're still a little bit unsure if they're actually going to exist. Or do we want to do our business as usual, cut down the forest and put in crops and send people into the forest?
Right. So you mentioned, Tracy, monitoring. And how do you go about monitoring these forests? And, you know, how do you do that?
Well, it's traditionally in industrialized countries who also report their emissions from their forests, they have a longstanding tradition of ground-based forest inventories where people are actually going into the forest, taking measurements, and tracking those over time. In many developing countries, this system hasn't been set up. And in fact, for many of the developing country forests, they're quite inaccessible. So it's not really feasible to follow that same process of using ground-based inventory. And fortunately, there have been a lot of developments in the field of satellite monitoring, and developing countries are really going to be helping to push the envelope of using satellite monitoring of forests in order to track deforestation. And this has encouraged a lot of research and testing of methodologies to use satellite monitoring so that all developing countries can access this technology and monitor their forests.
Let me ask you, you mentioned there's been a lot of developments in the, you know, science of satellites and all of that and imagery. And Dan, this is a question for either one of you. I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about the developments that we've had just in, the science of the effect these trees have on our environment. Because I would imagine in some of these countries, you might have people who say, well, I don't understand how this is a big deal for if I take down my forest. So maybe you can talk a little bit about how they're responding to the science we have now that's indicating that this is the problem that we thought it was?
Yeah, I think one issue is the link between climate change and cutting a tree down is not obvious to everyone, of course.
Right.
And, when we take really dry firewood and put it in our fireplace, wherever we are in the world, half of that wood, when it's burned, is released to the atmosphere in the form of carbon dioxide. And so we've got forests that are a typical forest in the Amazon will have 150 or more tons of carbon stored in the wood of those trees, and that goes into the atmosphere. So that very simple piece of the story is where you have to start with people who depend upon tropical forests. Another piece of this, though, is tropical forests actually maintain have other influences on climate because they release so much water into the atmosphere. In the Amazon, there's considerable evidence that cutting the forest down would trigger sort of a vicious cycle of drying where, since about half of a typical rainfall droplet that falls on the Amazon forest has been cycled through a tree already. It's a rainfall system that's very much dependent upon the forest itself.
Mm-hmm.
That's an even more abstract concept to bring to an indigenous village or farm village or cattle rancher.
Right. So let me ask you this: when you have these forests that have been destroyed, and you have a change like that, when we're talking with the water and the rainfall, that changes sort of the makeup of the land there, can these forests come back? I mean, are there areas where we see that it's beyond whether these forests will not return, or if you leave them alone, will they come back?
Yeah, and most of it really depends upon what precedes the abandonment. If you cut down a forest and put it into cattle pasture for 6 years and the soil is infertile and weeds grow into it and you abandon it, it'll come back to forest rather rapidly, accumulating carbon back out of the atmosphere as it regrows at the rate of anywhere from 2 to 5 tons per hectare each year. The problem is that if you've really disturbed the soil, if you've bulldozed it and put herbicides on it, for example, when you prepare soil to plant soybeans, you actually yank out all of the roots of the trees. And if a field like that is abandoned, it may take a couple decades to get forests back on it.
Yeah. Tracy, past efforts to save tropical forests have come pretty much from voluntary funding. So how would the funding of RED work?
Well, this is one of the topics that's still under discussion among the countries who are negotiating the RED design. However, one of the innovative ideas that has been put forward that would change the way that forests are conserved in the RED process is to connect this reduction of emissions in developing countries to the commitments made by industrialized countries. And this is how it would work. Industrialized countries will ostensibly, in this next climate treaty, make a commitment of a certain amount of emissions that they will reduce, just as they have for the Kyoto Protocol. One possible mechanism to include RED in this process is to allow these industrialized countries, as one way of meeting part of their target, to purchase credits from the developing countries as they reduce their emissions from deforestation. Once these credits are purchased, the industrialized country can use those credits toward its own emission reduction commitment under the new climate treaty.
Yeah. Well, now we've talked about some of the challenges and the debates that are going on. Are there other areas of debate or challenges that are holding this initiative back?
The issue that I mentioned about how to include all countries, whether their deforestation rates are high or low at this point, is a significant issue at this time. Another issue is that another one of the innovative ideas for the RED process is that this is being looked at as a national level program, whereas in the past, forest conservation efforts have been on the scale of individual projects for the most cases. So certain piece of land within a country will be protected. And this is one of the issues under debate right now. Many countries are in favor of going for a national approach where the government takes on the responsibility across all of its lands of reducing its emissions. However, there are still some countries who prefer to begin at a smaller scale, who want to start out with individual projects and then slowly move up mm-hmm. to a national approach. And so this is another area of debate among countries that will have to be decided before RED can be included in the climate regime.
I want to ask you both the same question, but Tracy, we'll start with you. Are you optimistic that RED will become a reality?
I'm very optimistic. I think the level of energy and innovation that has come around the RED process now is something that is something we haven't seen before. And the level of commitment from industrialized countries, from indigenous communities, from environmental groups and research organizations, all pushing towards the same goal of figuring out a way to include RED in the next climate treaty is a sign that this is looking very optimistic.
Dan, what about you?
I am optimistic about RED, but there is a dark shadow cast over these negotiations. That is the absence of the United States. U.S. negotiators who were present in Poland basically said, listen, we're just here to hold this space because there's new leadership coming in. And all signs are that the new leadership will have a more aggressive approach to climate change. I think a key message here, though, is that many of the emerging economic giants will probably not do much going into the final round of negotiations in Copenhagen unless there is some signal of U.S. leadership in climate change reductions. China and India, for example, have climate change programs that they probably will not bring forward into the negotiations unless the U.S. comes forward.
Mm-hmm. But you say there are signs that may indeed happen?
The new appointments that Barack Obama has made are very much concerned about climate change, about getting to a fossil fuel independent energy pathway. And he's put in top-notch people who are very worried about that issue. And he himself went public in California, even in December, right after his election, when Governor Schwarzenegger invited tropical forest nation governors to come in and discuss collaboration on the RED issue state to state. And he came forward and said that one of his top priorities is to get a U.S. cap-and-trade policy in place as soon as possible that would put a target on U.S. emissions. And it would also create an enormous flow of investment into alternative energy, better buildings, and better fleets of vehicles.
Yeah. Tracy, do you see this leading to other initiatives in the future, to protect other resources like maybe water?
I've certainly heard discussions about this. Of course, within the climate treaty, the focus is very much on carbon and reducing emissions that lead to global warming. But certainly this kind of innovation of figuring out a way to value ecosystem services is something that's being looked at across a range of different options, including water, including biodiversity and soil quality, that sort of thing. So I think that, yes, the RED process is sort of opening up this field for other environmental services to be included as well.
Dan, do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think the other ecosystem services, such as, you know, clean water provided by forest ecosystems, for a while they'll probably get a ride on the back of carbon, and these systems are cropping up around the world. You know, the city of New York gets much of its water from forested watersheds further north in the state, and it's decided against sort of industrial water treatment and for investing in those watersheds. So some of these systems are very close to home, but they're not global in scale. Mm-hmm. The thing about carbon is it gets it into the atmosphere and it mixes pretty well, so that you slow deforestation in the tropics and people sitting in Woods Hole, Massachusetts can reap the benefits of right. keeping those forests standing.
In the last minute or so that we have, Dan, I'll start with you. You want to mention any other accomplishments at this year's UN Climate Change Conference that we didn't touch on?
Boy, that's tough. As I mentioned, Brazil, I think, stole the show, and that, incidentally, was responded to with a billion-dollar challenge from the nation of Norway, and I think that's one of the most, that is, as they lower their deforestation, they can tap into $1 billion put forward by Norway, which for me is a phenomenal experiment in international governance.
Yeah. Tracy?
I would agree with Dan. I would say that one of the most exciting things we've seen through this conference and through the leadership of Brazil is that many developing countries are now stepping up with plans to reduce their emissions, which is something new in the climate treaty that we have now. Only industrialized countries are required to reduce their emissions to a certain level, but we're seeing developing countries really pick up the leadership and start to design their own plans whereby they're reducing their emissions as well.
Well, I want to thank you both, Dan Nepstead, who's Chief Program Officer for the Environmental Conservation at the Gordon and Betty Moore Foundation. Dan, thanks for joining us on the phone this morning. Also want to thank Tracy Johns, Policy Advisor at the Woods Hole Research Center, co-leader of the RED Initiative. Thank you, Tracy. Thanks for bringing us up to date on, you know, the global picture. Appreciate
thanks for
that.
Having me.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thank you for listening.
The Point is hosted and produced by Mindy Todd. The executive producer is Steve Young. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter. The Point is a production of the Cape and Islands NPR stations, a service of WGBH Radio.